It seems so hushed and still here. I feared you would not come, child. Sansa whirled. A man stepped out of the shadows, heavy-set, thick of neck, shambling. He wore a dark grey robe with a cowl pulled forward. But when a thin sliver of moonlight touched his cheek, she knew him at once by the blotchy skin and web of broken veins beneath. "Sir Dantas," she breathed, heartbroken. "Was it you?"
Yes, my lady.
When he moved closer, she could smell the sour stench of wine on his breath.
Me.
He held out a hand. Sansa shrank back.
Don't.
She slid a hand under her cloak to a hidden knife.
What do you want with me?
Only to help you, Dunter said, as you helped me.
You're drunk, aren't you?
Only one cup of wine to help my courage. If they catch me now, they'll strip the skin off my back.
And what will they do to me? Sansa found herself thinking of Lady again. She could smell out falsehood. She could. But she was dead. Father had killed her on account of Arya. She drew the knife and held it before her with both hands.
Are you going to stab me?
Dantas asked.
I will, she said. Tell me who sent you. No one, sweet lady. I swear it on my honor as a knight.
A knight? Joffrey had decreed that he was to be a knight no longer, only a fool, lower even than Moonboy. I prayed to the gods for a knight to come to save me, she said. I prayed and prayed. Why would they send me a drunken old fool?
I deserve that, though. I know it's queer, but all those years I was a knight, I was truly a fool. And now that I am a fool, I think I may find it in me to be a knight again, sweet lady. And all because of you. Your grace, your courage, you saved me. Not only from Joffrey, but from myself.
His voice dropped.
The singers say there was another fool once who was the greatest knight of all.
Florian, Sansa whispered. A shiver went through her.
Sweet lady, I would be your Florian,
Dantas said humbly, falling to his knees before her. Slowly, Sansa lowered the knife. Her head seemed terribly light, as if she were floating.
This is madness, to trust myself to this drunkard. But if I turn away, will the chance ever come again?
How would you do it?
Get me away.
Sir Dantas raised his face to her.
Taking you from the castle, that will be the hardest. Once you're out, there are ships that would take you home. I'd need to find the coin and make the arrangements, that's all.
Could we go now? She asked, hardly daring to hope.
This very night, no, my lady, I fear not. First, I must find a sure way to get you from the castle when the hour is ripe. It will not be easy, nor quick. They watch me as well. He licked his lips nervously. Would you put away your blade?
Sansa slipped the knife beneath her cloak.
Rise, sir. Thank you, sweet lady.
Sir Dantas lurched clumsily to his feet and brushed earth and leaves from his knees.
Your lord father was a truer man as the realm has ever known. But I stood by and let them slay him. I said nothing, did nothing. And yet, when Joffrey would have slain me, you spoke up. Lady, I have never been a hero. No Rhyam red wine or Barristan the Bold. I have won no tourneys, no renown in war, but I was a knight once, and you have helped me remember what that meant. My life is a poor thing, but it is yours.
Sir Dantas placed a hand under the gnarled bole of the heart tree. He was shaking, she saw.
I vow, with your father's gods as witness, that I shall send you home.
He swore, a solemn oath before the gods. Then I will put myself in your hands, sir. But how will I know when it is time to go? Will you send me another note? Sir Dantas glanced about anxiously.
The risk is too great. You must come here to the Godswood as often as you can. This is the safest place, the only safe place. Nowhere else. Not in your chambers, nor mine, nor on the steps, nor in the yard. Even if it seems we are alone. The stones have ears in the Red Keep, and only here may we talk freely. Only here, Sansa said. I'll remember. And if I should seem cruel or mocking or indifferent when men are watching, forgive me, child, I have a role to play. And you must do the same. One misstep and our heads will adorn the walls, as did your father's. She nodded. I understand. You will need be brave and strong and patient. Patient above all. I will be, she promised. But please, make it as soon as you can. I'm afraid. So am I, Sir Dontus said, smiling wanly. And now you must go, before you're missed. You will not come with me? Better we're never seen together. Nodding, Sansa took a step, then spun back nervous, and softly laid a kiss on his cheek, her eyes closed. My Florian, she whispered. The gods heard my prayer. She flew along the river walk, past the small kitchen and through the pig yard, her hurried footsteps lost beneath the squealing of the hugs in their pens. Home, she thought. Home. He's going to take me home. He'll keep me safe, my Florian. The songs about Florian and Jonquil were her very favourites. Florian was homely too, though not so old. She was racing headlong down the serpentine steps when a man lurched out of a hidden doorway. Sansa caromed into him and lost her balance. Iron fingers caught her by the wrist before she could fall, and a deep voice rasped at her. It's a long roll down a serpentine, little bird. Want to kill us both? His laughter was rough as a saw on stone. Maybe you do. The hound. No, my lord. Pardons, I'd never. Sansa averted her eyes, but it was too late. He'd seen her face. Please, you're hurting me. She tried to wriggle free. And what's Joff's little bird doing flying down a serpentine in the black of night? When she did not answer, he shook her. Where were you?
The Godswood, my lord, she said, not daring to lie. Praying. Praying for my father and for the king. Praying that he'd not be hurt.
Think I'm so drunk that I believe that.
He let go his grip on her arm. Swaying slightly as he stood, stripes of light and darkness falling across his terrible burnt face.
You look almost a woman. Face, tits, and you're taller too, almost. Ah, oh, you're still a stupid little bird, aren't you? Singing all the songs they taught you. Sing me a song, why don't you? Go on, sing to me. Some song about knights and fair maids. You like knights, don't you?
He was scaring her. True knights, my lord?
True knights, he mocked. And I'm no lord, no more than I'm a knight. Do I need to beat that into you?
Clegane reeled and almost fell.
Gods, he swore. Shoo, too much wine. Do you like wine, little bird? True wine. A flagon of sour red, dark as blood. All a man needs. Or a woman. He laughed, shook his head. Drunk as a dog, damn me. You come now. Back to your cage, little bird. I'll take you there. Keep you safe for the king.
The hound gave her a push, oddly gentle, and followed her down the steps. By the time they reached the bottom, he had lapsed back into a brooding silence, as if he had forgotten she was there. When they reached Maegor's Holdfast, she was alarmed to see that it was Sir Boris Blunt who now held the bridge. His high white helm turned stiffly at the sound of their footsteps. Sansa flinched away from his gaze. Sir Boris was the worst of the king's guards, an ugly man with a foul temper, all scowls and jowls.
That one is nothing to fear, girl. The hound laid a heavy hand on her shoulder. Paint stripes on a toad, he does not become a tiger.
Sir Boris lifted his visor.
Sir, where? Fuck you, sir, Boris. You're the knight, not me. I'm the king's dog, remember?
The king was looking for his dog earlier.
The dog was drinking. It was your night to shield him, sir. You and my other brothers.
Sir Boris turned to Sansa. How is it you're not in your chambers at this hour, lady? I went to the guardswood to pray for the safety of the king. The lie sounded better this time, almost true.
You expect her to sleep with all the noise? Clegane said. What was the trouble?
Fools at the gate, Sir Boris admitted. Some loose tongues spread tales of the preparation for Tyrek's wedding feast, and these wretches got it into their heads they should be feasted too. His Grace led a sortie and sent them scurrying.
A brave boy, Clegane said, mouth twitching.
Let us see how brave he is when he faces my brother, Sansa thought. The hound escorted her across the drawbridge. As they were winding their way up the steps, she said, Why do you let people call you a dog? You won't let anyone call you a knight.
I like dogs better than knights. My father's father was kennel master at the Rock. One autumn year, Lord Titus came between a lioness and her prey. The lioness didn't give a shit that she was Lannister's own sigil. Bitch tore into my lord's horse and would have done for my lord too, but my grandfather came up with the hounds. Three of his dogs died running her off. My grandfather lost a leg, so Lannister paid him for it with lands and a tower house and took his son to squire. The three dogs on our banner are the three that died in the yellow of autumn grass. A hound will die for you, but never lie to you. And he'll look you straight in the face.
He cupped her under her jaw, raising her chin, his fingers pinching her painfully.
And that's more than little birds can do, isn't it? I never got my song.
I know a song about Florian and Jonquil.
Florian and Jonquil? A fool and his cunt? Spare me. But one day, I'll have a song from you, whether you will it or no.
I will sing it for you gladly. Sandor Clegane snorted.
Pretty thing, and such a bad liar. A dog can smell a lie, you know. Look around you and take a good whiff. They're all liars here, and every one better than you.
Arya. When she climbed all the way to the highest branch, Arya could see chimneys poking through the trees. Thatched roofs clustered along the shore of the lake, and the small stream that emptied into it, and a wooden pier jutted out into the water beside a low, long building with a slate roof. She skinned farther out, until the branch began to sag under her weight. No boats were tied to the pier, but she could see thin tendrils of smoke rising from some of the chimneys and part of a wagon jutting out behind a stable. Someone's there. Arya chewed her lip. All the other places they'd come upon had been empty and desolate. Farms, villages, castles, septs, barns. It made no matter. If it could burn, the Lannisters had burned it. If it could die, they'd killed it. They had even set the woods ablaze where they could, though the leaves were still green and wet from recent rains, and the fires had not spread. They would have burned the lake if they could have, Gendry had said, and Arya knew he was right. On the night of their escape, the flames of the burning town had shimmered so brightly on the water that it had seemed that the lake was afire. When they finally summoned the nerve to steal back into the ruins the next night,
Nothing remained but blackened stones, the hollow shells of houses, and corpses. In some places, wisps of pale smoke still rose from the ashes. Hot Pie had pleaded with them not to go back, and Lummy called them fools and swore that Sir Amory would catch them and kill them too. But Lorch and his men had long gone by the time they reached the Holdfast. They found the gates broken down, the walls partly demolished, and the inside strewn with the unburied dead. One look was enough for Gentry.
"They are killed, everyone," he said. "And dogs have been at them too, look."
"Or wolves?"
"Dogs, wolves, it makes no matter. It's done here."
But Arya would not leave until they found Yorin. They couldn't have killed him, she told herself. He was too hard and tough, and a brother of the Night's Watch besides. She said as much to Gendry as they searched among the corpses. The axe blow that had killed him had split his skull apart, but the great tangled beard could be no one else's, or the garb, patched and unwashed, and so faded it was more grey than black. Sir Amory Lorch had given no more thought to burying his own dead than to those he had murdered, and the corpses of four Lannister men-at-arms were heaped near Yorin's. Arya wondered how many it had taken to bring him down. "He was going to take me home," she thought, as they dug the old man's hole. There were too many dead to bury them all, but Yorin at least must have a grave. Arya had insisted. "He was going to bring me safe to Winterfell. He promised." Part of her wanted to cry. The other part wanted to kick him. It was Gendry who thought of the Lord's Tower House and the three that Yorin had sent to hold it. They had come under attack as well, but the Round Tower had only one entry, a second-story door reached by a ladder. Once that had been pulled inside, Sir Aemry's men could not get at them. The Lannisters had piled brush against the tower's base and set it afire, but the stone would not burn, and Lorch did not have the patience to starve them out. Cutjack opened the door at Gendry's shout, and when Kurt said they'd be better pressing on north and going back, Arya had clung to the hope that she might still reach Winterfell. Well, this village was no Winterfell, but those thatched roofs promised warmth and shelter, and maybe even food, if they were bold enough to risk them. "Unless it's Lorch there. He had horses. He would have travelled faster than us." She watched from the tree for a long time, hoping she might see something, a man, a horse, a banner, anything that would help her know. A few times she glimpsed motion, but the buildings were so far off, it was hard to be certain. Once, very clearly, she heard the whinny of a horse. The air was full of birds, crows mostly. From afar, they were no larger than flies as they wheeled and flapped above the thatched roofs. To the east, God's eye was a sheet of sun-hammered blue that filled half the world. Someday, as they made their slow way up the muddy shore, Gendry wanted no part of any roads, and even Hot Pie and Lomir saw the sense in that. Arya felt as though the lake was calling her. She wanted to leap into those placid blue waters, to feel clean again, to swim and splash and bask in the sun. But she dare not take off her clothes where the others could see, not even to wash them. At the end of the day, she would often sit on a rock and dangle her feet in the cool water. She had finally thrown away her cracked and rotted shoes. Walking barefoot was hard at first, but the blisters had finally broken, the cuts had healed, and her soles had turned to leather. The mud was nice between her toes, and she liked to feel the earth underfoot when she walked. From up here, she could see a small wooded island off to the northeast. 30 yards from shore, three black swans were gliding over the water, so serene. No one had told them that war had come, and they cared nothing for burning towns and butchered men. She stared at them with yearning,
Part of her wanted to be a swan. The other part wanted to eat one. She had broken her fast on some acorn paste and a handful of bugs. Bugs weren't so bad when you got used to them. Worms were worse, but still not as bad as the pain in your belly after days without food. Finding bugs was easy. All you had to do was kick over a rock. Arya had eaten a bug once when she was little, just to make Sansa screech, so she hadn't been afraid to eat another. Weasel wasn't either, but Hot Pie retched up the beetle he tried to swallow, and Lummy and Gendry wouldn't even try. Yesterday, Gendry had caught a frog and shared it with Lummy, and a few days before, Hot Pie had found blackberries and stripped the bush bare. But mostly, they had been living on water and acorns. Kurtz had told them how to use rocks and make a kind of acorn paste. It tasted awful. She wished the poacher hadn't died. He'd known more about the woods than all the rest of them together. But he'd taken an arrow through the shoulder, pulling in the ladder at the tower house. Tarba had packed it with mud and moss from the lake, and for a day or two, Kurtz swore the wound was nothing, even though the flesh of his throat was turning dark, while angry red welts crept up his jaw and down his chest. Then one morning, he couldn't find the strength to get up, and by the next, he was dead. They buried him under a mound of stones, and Cut Jack had claimed his sword and hunting horn, while Tarba helped himself to bow and boots and knife. They'd taken it all when they left. At first, they thought the two had just gone hunting, that they'd soon return with game and feed them all. But they waited and waited until finally Gendry made them move on. Maybe Tarba and Cut Jack figured they would stand a better chance without a gaggle of orphan boys to herd along. They probably would, too, but that didn't stop her hating them for leaving. Beneath the tree, Hot Pie barked like a dog. Kurtz had told them to use animal sounds to signal to each other. An old poacher's trick, he'd said. But he died before he could teach them how to make the sounds right. Hot Pie's bird calls were awful. His dog was better, but not much. Arya hopped from the high branch to one beneath it, her hands out for balance. A water dancer never falls. Lightfoot, her toes curled tight around the branch, she walked a few feet, hopped down to a larger limb, then swung hand over hand through the tangle of leaves until she reached the trunk. The bark was rough beneath her fingers, against her toes. She descended quickly, jumping down the final 6 feet, rolling when she landed. Gendry gave her a hand to pull her up.
"You were up there a long time. What could you see?"
"A fishing village. Just a little place, north along the shore. 26 thatch roofs and one slate, I counted. I saw part of a wagon. Someone's there." At the sound of her voice, Weasel came creeping out from the bushes. Lummy had named her that. He said she looked like a weasel, which wasn't true. But they couldn't keep on calling her the crying girl after she'd finally stopped crying. Her mouth was filthy. Arya hoped she hadn't been eating mud again.
"Did you see people?" asked Gendry.
"Mostly just roofs," Arya admitted. "But some chimneys were smoking, and I heard a horse." The weasel put her arms around her leg, clutching tight. Sometimes she did that now.
"If there's people, there's food," Hot Pie said too loudly.
Gendry was always telling him to be more quiet, but it never did any good.
"Might be they'll give us some. Might be they'll kill us too," Gendry said. "Not if we yielded," Hot Pie said hopefully. "Now, you sound like Lummy."
Lummy Greenhands sat propped up between two thick roots at the foot of an oak tree. A spear had taken him through his left calf during the fight at the Holdfast. By the end of the next day, he had to limp along one-legged with an arm around Gendry, and now he couldn't even do that. They hacked branches off trees to make a litter for him. But it was slow, hard work carrying him along, and he whimpered every time they jounced him.
"We have to yield," he said. "That's what Yoren should have done. He should have opened the gates like they said."
Arya was sick of Lommy going on about how Yoren should have yielded. It was all he talked about when they carried him, that and his leg and his empty belly. Hot Pie agreed. "They told Yoren to open the gates. They told him in the king's name. You have to do what they tell you in the king's name. It was that stinky old man's fault. If he'd have yielded, they would have left us be."
Gendry frowned.
"Knights and lordlings, they take each other captive and pay ransoms, but they don't care if the likes of you yield or not."
He turned to Arya.
"What else did you see?"
"If it's a fishing village, they'd sell us fish, I bet," said Hot Pie. "The lake teemed with fresh fish, but they had nothing to catch them with."
Arya had tried to use her hands the way she had seen Koss do, but fish were quicker than pigeons, and the water played tricks on her eyes.
"I don't know about fish."
Arya tugged at the weasel's matted hair, thinking it might be best to hack it off. "There's crows down by the water. Something's dead there."
"Fish washed up on shore," Hot Pie said. "If the crows eat it, I bet we could."
"We should catch some crows. We could eat them," said Lummy. "We could make a fire and roast them like chickens."
Gendry looked fierce when he scowled. His beard had grown in thick and black as briar.
"I said no fires."
"Lummy's hungry," Hot Pie whined, "and I am too."
"We're all hungry," said Arya.
"You're not," Lummy spat from the ground. "Worm breath."
Arya could have kicked him in his wound.
"I said I'd dig worms for you too if you wanted."
Lummy made a disgusted face.
"If it wasn't for my leg, I'd hunter some boars."
"Some boars," she mocked. "You need a boar spear to hunt boars, and horses and dogs, and men to flush the boar from its lair."
Her father had hunted boar in the Wolf's Wood with Rob and John. Once he even took Bran, but never Arya, even though she was older. Septa Mordain said boar hunting was not for ladies, and Mother only promised that when she was older, she might have her own hawk. She was older now, but if she had a hawk, she'd eat it.
"What do you know about hunting boars?" said Hot Pie. "More than you."
Gendry was in no mood to hear it.
"Quiet, both of you. I need to think what to do."
He always looked pained when he tried to think, like it hurt him something fierce.
"Yield," Lummy said. "I told you to shut up about the yielding. We don't even know who's in there. Maybe we can steal some food."
"Lummy could steal if it wasn't for his leg," said Hot Pie. "He was a thief in the city."
"A bad thief," Arya said, "or he wouldn't have got caught." Gendry squinted up at the sun.
"Even fall will be the best time to sneak in. I'll go scout come dark."
"No, I'll go," Arya said. "You're too noisy." Gendry got that look on his face.
"We'll both go." "Arry should go," Lummy said. "He's sneakier than you are."
"We'll both go," I said.
"But what if you don't come back? Hot Pie can't carry me by himself. You know he can't."
"And there's wolves," Hot Pie said. "I heard them last night. When I had the watch, they sounded close."
Arya had heard them too. She'd been asleep in the branches of an elm, but the howling had woken her. She'd sat awake for a good hour, listening to them, prickles creeping up her spine.
"And you won't even let us have a fire to keep them off," Hot Pie said. "It's not right, leaving us for the wolves."
"No one is leaving you,"
Gendry said in disgust.
"Lummy has his spear if the wolves come, and you'll be with him.
We're just going to go see, that's all. We're coming back. Whoever it is, you should yield to them, Lummy whined. I need some potion for my leg. It hurts bad.
If we see any leg potion, we'll bring it, Gendry said.
Harry, let's go. I want to get near before the sun is down. Up high, you keep Weasel here. I don't want her following. Last time she kicked me. I'll kick you if you don't keep her here.
Without waiting for an answer, Gendry donned his steel helm and walked off. Arya had to scamper to keep up. Gendry was 5 years older and a foot taller than she was, and long of leg as well. For a while he said nothing, just ploughed on through the trees with an angry look on his face, making too much noise. But finally he stopped and said, I think Lummy's going to die. She was not surprised. Kurtz had died of his wound, and he'd been a lot stronger than Lummy. Whenever it was Arya's turn to help carry him, she could feel how warm his skin was and smell the stink of his leg. Maybe we could find a maester.
You'll only find maesters in castles, and even if we found one, he wouldn't dirt his hands on the likes of Lummy.
Gendry ducked under a low-hanging limb.
That's not true.
Maester Lewin would have helped anyone who came to him, she was certain.
He's going to die, and the sooner he does it, the better for the rest of us. We should just leave him, like he says. If it was you or me hurt, you know he'd leave us.
They scrambled down a steep cut and up the other side, using roots for handholds.
I'm sick of carrying him, and I'm sick of all his talk about yielding, too. If he could stand up, I'd knock his teeth in. Lummy's no use to anyone. That crying girl's no use either.
You leave Weasel alone. She's just scared and hungry, that's all. Arya glanced back, but the girl was not following for once. Hot Pie must have grabbed her, like Gendry had told him.
She's no use, Gendry repeated stubbornly. Her and Hot Pie and Lummy, they're slowing us down, and they're gonna get us killed. You're the only one of the bunch who's good for anything, even if you are a girl.
Arya froze in her steps. I'm not a girl.
Yes, you are. Do you think I'm as stupid as they are?
No, you're stupider. The Night's Watch doesn't take girls. Everyone knows that.
That's true. I don't know why Yoren brought you, but he must have had some reason. You're still a girl.
I am not.
Then pull out your cock and take a piss. Go on.
I don't need to take a piss. If I wanted to, I could.
Liar. You can't take out your cock because you don't have one. I never noticed before when there were 30 of us, but you always go off in the woods to make your water. You don't see Up Pie doing that, nor me neither. If you're not a girl, you must be some eunuch.
You're the eunuch.
You know I'm not. Gendry smiled. You want me to take out my cock and prove it? I don't have anything to hide.
Yes, you do, Arya blurted, desperate to escape the subject of the cock she didn't have. Those gold cloaks were after you at the inn, and you won't tell us why.
I wish I knew. I think Yoren knew, but he never told me. Why do you think they were after you, though?
Arya bit her lip. She remembered what Yoren had said the day he had hacked off her hair.
This lot, half of them, will turn you over to the Queen quick as spit for a pardon, and maybe a few silvers. The other half will do the same, only they'd rape you first.
Only Gendry was different. The Queen wanted him too. I'll tell you, if you tell me, she said wearily.
I would if I knew, Harry. Is that really what you're called, or do you have some girl's name?
Arya glared at the gnarled root by her feet. She realized
that the pretense was done. Gendry knew, and she had nothing in her pants to convince him otherwise. She could draw a needle and kill him where he stood, or else trust him. She wasn't certain she'd be able to kill him, even if she tried. He had his own sword, and he was a lot stronger. All that was left was the truth. Lummy and Hot Pie can't know, she said. They won't, he swore. Not from me. Arya, she raised her eyes to his. My name is Arya, of House Stark. Of House? It took him a moment before he said, the king's hand was named Stark, the one they killed for a traitor. He was never a traitor. He was my father. Gendry's eyes widened. So that's why you thought... She nodded. Yoren was taking me home to Winterfell.
You're highborn then. You'll be a lady.
Arya looked down at her ragged clothes and bare feet, all cracked and calloused. She saw the dirt under her nails, the scabs on her elbows, the scratches on her hands. Septa Mordain wouldn't even know me, I bet. Sansa might, but she'd pretend not to. My mother's a lady and my sister, but I never was.
Yes, you were. You were a lord's daughter, and you lived in a castle, didn't you? And you... God be good, I never...
All of a sudden, Gendry seemed uncertain, almost afraid.
All that about cocks, I never should have said that. And I've been pissing in front of you and everything. I beg your pardon, my lady.
Stop that, Arya hissed. Was he mocking her?
I know my courtesies, my lady,
Gendry said, stubborn as ever.
Whenever highborn girls come into the shop with their fathers, my master told me I was to bend the knee and speak only when they spoke to me and call them milady.
If you start calling me milady, even Hot Pie is going to notice. And you better keep on pissing the same way too.
As my lady commands.
Arya slammed his chest with both hands. He tripped over a stone and sat down with a thump.
What kind of lord's daughter are you? He said, laughing.
This kind. She kicked him in the side, but it only made him laugh harder. You laugh all you like. I'm going to see who's in the village. The sun had already fallen below the trees. Dusk would be on them in no time at all. For once, it was Gendry who had to hurry after. You smell that? She asked. He sniffed the air.
Rotten fish.
You know it's not.
We'd better be careful. I'll go around west, see if there's some road. There must be, if you saw a wagon. You take the shore. If you need help, bark like a dog.
That's stupid. If I need help, I'll shout, help. She darted away, bare feet silent in the grass. When she glanced back over her shoulder, he was watching her, with that pained look on his face that meant he was thinking.
He's probably thinking that he shouldn't be letting Milady go stealing food.
Arya just knew he was going to be stupid now. The smell grew stronger as she got closer to the village. It did not smell like rotten fish to her. The stench was ranker, fouler. She wrinkled her nose. Where the trees began to thin, she used the undergrowth, slipping from bush to bush, quiet as a shadow. Every few yards, she stopped to listen. The third time, she heard horses, and a man's voice as well, and the smell got worse. Dead man stink, that's what it is. She had smelled it before, with Yoren and the others. A dense thicket of brambles grew south of the village. By the time she reached it, the long shadows of sunset had begun to fade, and the lantern bugs were coming out. She could see thatched roofs just beyond the hedge. She crept along until she found a gap and squirmed through on her belly.
keeping well hidden until she saw what made the smell. Beside the lapping waters of God's Eye, a long gibbet of raw green wood had been thrown up, and things that had once been men dangled there, their feet in chains, while crows pecked at their flesh and flapped from corpse to corpse. For every crow, there were 100 flies. When the wind blew off the lake, the nearest corpse twisted on its chain ever so slightly. The crows had eaten most of its face, and something else had been at it as well, something much larger. Throat and chest had been torn apart, and glistening green entrails and ribbons of ragged flesh dangled from where the belly had been opened. One arm had been ripped right off the shoulder. Arya saw the bones a few feet away, gnawed and cracked, picked clean of meat. She made herself look at the next man, and the one beyond him, and the one beyond him, telling herself she was hard as a stone. Corpses all, so savaged and decayed that it took her a moment to realize they had been stripped before they were hanged. They did not look like naked people. They hardly looked like people at all. The crows had eaten their eyes, and sometimes their faces. Of the sixth in the long row, nothing remained but a single leg, still tangled in its chains, swaying with each breeze. Fear cuts deeper than swords. Dead men could not hurt her, but whoever had killed them could. Well beyond the gibbet, two men, in male hauberks, stood leaning on their spears in front of the long, low building by the water, the one with the slate roof. A pair of tall poles had been driven into the muddy ground in front of it, banners drooping from each staff. One looked red and one paler, white or yellow, maybe, but both were limp, and with the dusk settling, she could not even be certain that red one was Lannister crimson. I don't need to see the lion. I can see all the dead people. Who else would it be but Lannisters? Then there was a shout. The two spearmen turned at the cry, and a third man came into view, shoving a captive before him. It was growing too dark to make out faces, but the prisoner was wearing a shiny steel helm, and when Arya saw the horns, she knew it was Gendry. "You stupid, 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 stupid," she thought. If he'd been here, she would have kicked him again. The guards were talking loudly, but she was too far away to make out the words, especially with the crows gabbling and flapping closer to hand. One of the spearmen snatched the helm off Gendry's head and asked him a question, but he must not have liked the answer, because he smashed him across the face with the butt of his spear and knocked him down. The one who captured him gave him a kick, while the second spearman was trying on the bull's head helm. Finally, they pulled him to his feet and marched him off toward the storehouse. When they opened the heavy wooden doors, a small boy darted out, but one of the guards grabbed his arm and flung him back inside. Arya heard sobbing from inside the building, and then a shriek so loud and full of pain that it made her bite her lip. The guard shoved Gendry inside with the boy and barred the doors behind them. Just then, a breath of wind came sighing off the lake, and the banners stirred and lifted. The one on the tall staff bore the golden lion, as she'd feared. On the other, three sleek black shapes ran across a field as yellow as butter. Dogs, she thought. Arya had seen those dogs before. But where? It didn't matter. The only thing that mattered was that they had Gendry. Even if he was stubborn and stupid, she had to get him out. She wondered if they knew that the queen wanted him. One of the guards took off his helm and donned Gendry's instead. It made her angry to see him wearing it, but she knew there was nothing she could do to stop him. She thought she heard more screams from inside the windowless storehouse, muffled by the masonry, but it was hard to be certain.
She stayed long enough to see the guard changed, and much more besides. Men came and went. They led their horses down to the stream to drink. A hunting party returned from the wood, carrying a deer's carcass slung from a pole. She watched them clean and gut it, and build a cook fire on the far side of the stream. And the smell of cooking meat mingled queerly with the stench of corruption. Her empty belly roiled, and she thought she might retch. The prospect of food brought other men out of the houses, nearly all of them wearing bits of mail or boiled leather. When the deer was cooked, the choicest portions were carried to one of the houses. She thought that the dark might let her crawl close and free Gendry, but the guards kindled torches off the cook fire. A squire brought meat and bread to the two guarding the storehouse, and later two more men joined them, and they all passed a skin of wine from hand to hand. When it was empty, the others left, but the two guards remained, leaning on their spears. Arya's arms and legs were stiff when she finally wriggled out from under the briar into the dark of the wood. It was a black night, with a thin sliver of moon appearing and disappearing as the clouds blew past. Silent as a shadow, she told herself as she moved through the trees. In this darkness, she dare not run, for fear of tripping on some unseen route or losing her way. On her left, Guard's Eye lapped calmly against its shores. On her right, a wind sighed through the branches, and leaves rustled and stirred. Far off, she heard the howling of wolves. Lummy and Hot Pie almost shit themselves when she stepped out of the trees behind them. "Quiet," she told them, putting an arm around Weasel when the little girl came running up. Hot Pie stared at her with big eyes. "We thought you'd left us." He had his short sword in hand, the one Yoren had taken off the gold cloak. "I was scared you was a wolf." "Where's the bull?" asked Lummy. "They caught him," Arya whispered. "We have to get him out. Hot Pie, you've got to help. We'll sneak up and kill the guards, and then I'll open the door." Hot Pie and Lummy exchanged a look. "How many?" "I couldn't count," Arya admitted. 20 at least, but only 2 on the door." Hot Pie looked as if he were going to cry. "We can't fight 20. You only need to fight 1. I'll do the other, and we get Gendry out and run." "We should yield," Lummy said. "Just go in and yield." Arya shook her head stubbornly. "Then just leave him, Harry," Lummy pleaded. "They don't know about the rest of us. If we hide, they'll go away. Do you know they will? It's not our fault Gendry's captured." "You're stupid, Lummy," Arya said angrily. "You'll die if we don't get Gendry out. Who's going to carry you?" "You and Hot Pie." "All the time, with no one else to help? We'll never do it. Gendry was a strong one. Anyhow, I don't care what you say. I'm going back for him." She looked at Hot Pie. "Are you coming?" Hot Pie glanced at Lummy, at Arya, at Lummy again. "I'll come," he said reluctantly. "Lummy, you keep Weasel here." He grabbed the little girl by the hand and pulled her close. "What if the wolves come?" "Yield," Arya suggested. Finding their way back to the village seemed to take hours. Hot Pie kept stumbling in the dark and losing his way, and Arya had to wait for him and double back. Finally, she took him by the hand and led him along through the trees. "Just be quiet and follow." When they could make out the first faint glow of the village fires against the sky, she said, "There's dead men hanging on the other side of the hedge, but they're nothing to be scared of. Just remember, fear cuts deeper than swords. We'll have to go real quiet and slow." Hot Pie nodded. She wriggled under the briar first and waited for him on the far side. Crouch low. Hot Pie emerged pale and panting, his face and arms bloody with long scratches. He started to say something, but Arya put a finger to his lips.
On hands and knees, they crawled along the gibbet, beneath the swaying dead. Hot Pie never once looked up nor made a sound. Until the crow landed on his back and he gave a muffled gasp. "Who's there?" A voice boomed suddenly from the dark. Hot Pie leapt to his feet. "I yield!" He threw away his sword as dozens of crows rose shrieking and complaining to flap about the corpses. Aria grabbed his leg and tried to drag him back down, but he wrenched loose and ran forward, waving his arms. "I yield! I yield!" She bounced up and drew needle, but by then men were all around her. Aria slashed at the nearest, but he blocked her with a steel-clad arm, and someone else slammed into her and dragged her to the ground. A third man wrenched the sword from her grasp. When she tried to bite, her teeth snapped shut on cold, dirty chainmail. "Ho-ho! A fierce one!" the man said, laughing. The blow from his ironclad fist near knocked her head off. They talked over her as she lay hurting, but Aria could not seem to understand the words. Her ears rang. When she tried to crawl off, the earth moved beneath her. They took needle. The shame of that hurt worse than the pain, and the pain hurt a lot. John had given her that sword. Sirio had taught her to use it. Finally, someone grabbed the front of her jerkin, yanked her to her knees. Hot Pie was kneeling too, before the tallest man Aria had ever seen, a monster from one of old Nan's stories. She never saw where the giant had come from. Three black dogs raced across his faded yellow surcoat, and his face looked as hard as if it had been cut from stone. Suddenly, Aria knew where she had seen those dogs before. The night of the tourney at King's Landing, all the knights had hung their shields outside their pavilions. "That one belongs to the hound's brother," Sansa had confided when they passed the black dogs on the yellow field. "He's even bigger than Hodor, you'll see. They call him the Mountain That Rides." Aria let her head droop, only half aware of what was going on around her. Hot Pie was yielding some more. The mountain said, "You'll lead us to these others," and walked off. Next, she was stumbling past the dead men on their gibbet, while Hot Pie told their captors that he'd bake them pies and tarts if they didn't hurt him. Four men went with them. One carried a torch, one a long sword, two had spears. They found Lummi where they'd left him, under the oak. "I yield," he called out at once when he saw them. He'd flung away his own spear and raised his hands, splotchy green with old dye. "I yield, please." The man with the torch searched around under the trees. "Are you the last?" "Baker boy said there was a girl." "She ran off when she heard you coming," Lummi said. "You made a lot of noise." And Aria thought, "Run, weasel, run as far as you can. Run and hide and never come back." "Tell us where we can find that horse on Dondarrion, and there'll be hot meal in it for you." "Who?" said Lummi blankly. "I told you this lot don't know no more than those cunts in the village. Waste of bloody time." One of the spearmen drifted over to Lummi. "Something wrong with your leg, boy. It got hurt. Can you walk?" He sounded concerned. "No," said Lummi. "You got to carry me." "Think so?" The man lifted his spear casually and drove the point through the boy's soft throat. Lummi never even had time to yield again. He jerked once, and that was all. When the man pulled the spear loose, blood sprayed out in a dark fountain. "Carry him," he says, he muttered, chuckling. Tyrion. They had warned him to dress warmly. Tyrion Lannister took them at their word. He was garbed in heavy quilted breeches and a woolen doublet, and over it all he had thrown the shadowskin cloak he had acquired in the Mountains of the Moon. The cloak was absurdly long, made for a man twice his height. When he was not a horse, the only way to wear the thing was to wrap it around him several times, which made him look like a ball of striped fur. Even so, he was glad he had listened. The chill in the long, dank vault went bone deep. Timmet had chosen to retreat back up to the cellar after a brief taste of the cold below. They were somewhere under the hill of Rainey's, behind the Guildhall of the Alchemists. The damp stone walls were splotchy with nitre, and the only light came from the sealed iron and glass oil lamp that Halin the pyromancer carried so gingerly.
Gingerly indeed, and these would be the ginger jars.
Tyrion lifted one for inspection. It was round and ruddy, a fat clay grapefruit. A little big for his hand, but it would fit comfortably in the grip of a normal man, he knew. The pottery was thin, so fragile, that even he had been warned not to squeeze too tightly, lest he crush it in his fist. The clay felt roughened, pebbled. Halin had told him that it was intentional.
A smooth pot is more apt to slip from a man's grasp.
The wildfire oozed slowly toward the lip of the jar when Tyrion tilted it to peer inside. The colour would be a murky green, he knew, but the poor light made that impossible to confirm.
Thick, he observed.
That is from the coal, my lord, said Halin, a pallid man with soft, damp hands and an obsequious manner.
He was dressed in striped black and scarlet robes trimmed with sable, but the fur looked more than a little patchy and moth-eaten.
As it warms, the substance will flow more easily, like lamp oil.
The substance was the pyromancer's own term for wildfire. They called each other wisdom as well, which Tyrion found almost as annoying as their custom of hinting at the vast secret stores of knowledge that they wanted him to think they possessed. Once theirs had been a powerful guild, but in recent centuries, the maesters of the Citadel had supplanted the alchemists almost everywhere. Now only a few of the older order remained, and they no longer even pretended to transmute metals. But they could make wildfire.
Water will not quench it, I am told. That is so. Once it takes fire, the substance will burn fiercely until it is no more. More, it will seep into cloth, wood, leather, even steel, so they take fire as well.
Tyrion remembered the Red Priest, Thoros of Myr, and his flaming sword. Even a thin coating of wildfire could burn for an hour. Thoros always needed a new sword after a melee, but Robert had been fond of the man and ever glad to provide one.
Why doesn't it seep into the clay as well? Oh, but it does, said Halin. There is a vault below, this one, where we store the older pots. Those from King Eri's day, it was his fancy to have the jars made in the shapes of fruits. Very perilous fruits indeed, my lord Hand, and riper now than ever, if you take my meaning. We have sealed them with wax and pumped the lower vault full of water, but even so, by rights, they ought to have been destroyed, but so many of our masters were murdered during the sack of King's Landing. The few acolytes who remained were unequal to the task, and much of the stock we made for Ares was lost. Only last year, 200 jars were discovered in a storeroom beneath the great sept of Baelor. No one could recall how they came there, but I'm sure I do not need to tell you that the High Septon was beside himself with terror. I myself saw that they were safely moved. I had a cart filled with sand and sent our most able acolytes. We worked only by night. We did a splendid job, I have no doubt.
Tyrion placed the jar he had been holding back among its fellows. They covered the table, standing in orderly rows of four and marching away into the subterranean dimness. And there were other tables beyond, many other tables.
These are fruits of the late King Ares. Can they still be used? Oh, yes, most certainly. But carefully, my lord, ever so carefully.
As it ages, the substance grows even more, fickle, let us say. Any flame will set it afire, any spark, too much heat, and jars will blaze up of their own accord.